Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Gotting. Thank you so much for choosing to involve me with your day today. Of course, it's the day after Halloween, and or 2 days after Halloween, I guess. And, you know, it's I get a little bit, I don't know how I feel about the fact that Des Moines and the central Iowa area got rid of Beggar's Night. It was kind of a kitschy little thing. It's kind of a Des Moines thing where, you know, you wouldn't do it on Halloween, you would do it on another day. You make the kids tell a joke, you don't just give them candy, you make them tell a joke. So, I don't know, it's kind of a quirky little cool thing. I do understand the idea of doing it on Halloween, because that's what everybody else does, but I don't know why they needed to go change it. I'm just not sure. It would make sense to me to do it a Saturday, but I also understand that they don't really want to do it on a Saturday because Halloween does bring out some crazies. But, you know, it was one of those things. It was kind of a quirky little Des Moines thing, and now that's over, and Halloween is... I don't know if they're even going to call it Beggar's Night anymore. I don't know why they would, because it's Halloween, but... I don't know. I just kind of like, you know, a few years ago, my daughters were, when we first moved to Des Moines, about 2016, so my daughters would have been 8 and 6 when we got to Des Moines, and the first probably 3, maybe more years, there were a bunch of girls in our neighborhood, and just happened to be a bunch of girls, but that's what it was, and we went Christmas caroling. We did that for several years, and it was really, really cool. And that's something I remember from my childhood that was cool. Just knock on people's door and sing them songs. And everybody just absolutely loved it, as you can imagine. And it was really cool. I kind of miss that we're getting away from some of those traditions. Of course, that one's been gone for a long time. I don't know. I have not, in my adult life, been Christmas caroled, I don't think, at all. It might have been once. Might or might not, but it's not, certainly not like it used to. I think churches should bring that back. It's such a fun thing. But I guess this week I've been a little bit nostalgic and maybe a little bit weepy-eyed on my daughter, my oldest daughter, Sydney. She played her final high school volleyball game. And I don't know if it was district, whatever it was, that they played at Valley High School, and Valley's really a juggernaut, if you don't know that. They are a sports juggernaut. It was weird because they had lost the first two. Valley was ranked number 7 in the state, and so my daughter and her team played well, but they were just overmatched. And they were down 2 games, so it was the third game. It was the deciding game, and it was 25 to some score that was far enough below that they were not coming back. And Valley was serving. And I said, you know, it's that weird, it's almost like some sort of a strange place to be. Like, when this ball hits the floor, I mean, I know exactly when it is. It'll be like the last few seconds of a high school football game when your son is a senior or, you know, whatever it is. It's just that last few seconds. Like, this is crazy. Like, as soon as this ball drops, I mean, unless our team would have scored, but even then it would have been however many more, but I was like, this, you know, this is it. It was just weird. It was weird. And then my daughter, she came over after the game, and she was bawling, and I was pretty teary-eyed myself. It's just one of those things. You're moving on into that next phase in her life, and of course I'm just watching life go by. I mean, not like I'm just watching it go by. I'm doing a lot of stuff. but, you know, it's really... It was her first real last. Like, I mean, she had her last high school football game, I believe was last week as well. Might not have been, I'm not sure about that. But she didn't play football, so. But, yeah, kind of nostalgic, a little melancholy. I wouldn't even call it bittersweet, because it just, I don't know. It was just there, and now I have, she has one season of track in the spring, and then I will cease to ever watch her play organized athletics again. And so just kind of a strange, nostalgic time. So I wanted to talk today about the difference between and what each of these things are. So a shoulder dislocation, okay, and then a shoulder separation. Now, they're very, very, very different. People confuse them, and people will say, oh, I dislocated my shoulder, and then I look at the x-ray, and there was never any dislocation at all. It was a separation. So let me explain. Start with a little bit of shoulder anatomy. So the shoulder is held on to the body by the shoulder blade in the back, and that bone is also called the scapula, the shoulder blade. In the front, it's the collarbone, or the clavicle. And so these two are how the whole shoulder joint is attached to the body itself. And then, of course, the muscles of the rotator cuff. And so you have the scapula moves up and down in sort of a semicircle way on the chest wall, on the back of the chest wall. And the clavicle has a little bit of rotation to it, but there's not a ton of motion in the clavicle or the collarbone. And we can talk about injuries to those structures as well quickly, I guess. The scapula is very rarely fractured, so that the scapula comes all the way in and then becomes the socket. So the shoulder blade, if you've ever seen a shoulder blade of an animal or seen a good picture of a shoulder blade of a human, you'll see that on the opposite end of the big wing, there is that little cup, and that is the socket, the shoulder socket. So when the shoulder blade breaks, it can break at the socket, the neck of the socket, sort of, or the socket itself can break in multiple different areas. And then the scapula, the wing of the scapula, that we call it, that can break too. These are very high energy. These are not going to be sports injuries. This is going to be falling from a height or a car accident or something like that. You're not really going to see those in sports. You can. I mean, it's just very, very rare. The trauma is so heavy that if you see a scapula fracture, you have to be aware of potential cardiac and pulmonary, so lung and heart, repercussions from having that injury. Now, the collarbone breaks all the time. You fall off your bike, a lot of times your collarbone will break. You can break it in any sport, basically, by falling to the ground or football getting hit, something like that. Now, the collarbone attaches to the shoulder blade. In the front, the collarbone attaches to the sternum, which is the middle where all your ribs attach. And in the back, the scapula is just kind of floats. It's attached by a bunch of different muscles, but it kind of floats on the chest wall, so there's not like a real attachment. It's just all the muscles holding it there. And then at the end of the collarbone, it attaches to the acromion process of the scapula. So that becomes your acromioclavicular joint. And the acromion process of the scapula, directly beneath that, is the humeral head. But that little joint, and you can kind of feel it. If you feel your collarbone, you feel over, and then you feel the top of your shoulder, you feel that that's a different bone. And you can actually, I can anyway, you should be able to kind of feel a little bit of give there at that joint if you're pressing on it pretty hard. And it can hurt, too, because you can get arthritis there. So when you dislocate a shoulder, it is not the end of the collarbone, the clavicle, and the acromion, not the acromioclavicular joint. That's a separation. So a separation is where there's a disruption between the joint of the collarbone and the scapula, that little tiny joint, the acromioclavicular joint, that's sort of on the front side there. And they come in different grades of the injury, and it really depends on... So I know it's kind of hard to describe this kind of complex anatomy on the radio, but we're doing the best we can. So a process is sort of like just in orthopedic anatomy, it's just a piece of bone that kind of sticks out. So the scapula has the acromion process, becomes a joint with your clavicle, the acromioclavicular joint. Below that, and a little bit towards the inside, it has the coracoid process. And the coracoid process is where the short head of your biceps attaches. The long head of your biceps comes up into the shoulder around the head of the humerus and attaches to the top of the glenoid. at the labrum of the glenoid. So the glenoid is the socket, and the labrum is the lip that deepens the socket. And so the glenoid is bone, it has a little bit of cartilage lining, and then there's a lip that's kind of like the meniscus in the knee, and it deepens the socket. And so when the biceps comes up and around there, the biceps bi means two. So the biceps muscle has one long head that comes up into the shoulder. The other one just avoids the shoulder altogether and attaches to the coracoid process from below. And from above, the coracoid process has a couple ligaments, three in particular, that hold the clavicle down. So when you have a shoulder separation, those ligaments that are holding the shoulder down, they make it appear that the collarbone goes up, but what really happens is the rest of the shoulder slinks down or slumps down. So when you see somebody who's had an acromioclavicular joint separation, oftentimes you'll see it in down linemen and also in hockey players, and they'll have these big, huge bumps almost just right inside the shoulder, okay? And that you might or might not have seen somebody like that. You might have them yourselves. We typically do not do much with those. If the collarbone breaks, most of the time nowadays, if it's displaced, we're going to go ahead and fix it. But the acromioclavicular joint, only if it's really far up, like a grade 4 or 5 on a scale of 1 to 5, if it's really far up, like 2 or 3 centimeters above the shoulder blade, that can lead to some disruption of shoulder function over time. So, and it's a pretty complicated operation. You actually have to go in and put a graft around the coracoid process and slink it down, and sometimes you put a screw in and then take that screw out. It's a tough joint to fix. But that's a shoulder separation. Most of them are mild, and athletes will separate their shoulder in a game and return to that same game. At a certain level of athletes will. They'll go in, they'll get an x-ray. It's a mild shoulder separation. You know, sometimes they'll go back into the game. If it's a severe shoulder separation, they probably would not go back in the game. But my point is, it's not typically as bad of an injury as a shoulder dislocation. Now, shoulder dislocation is where the ball comes out of the socket altogether. And so what happens is the labrum that is around there, the labrum will tear, and they usually come out inferior and anterior, which means down the bottom and the front. That's typically where they are. That just happens to be the direction of force that's common and the way they go. Now, you can dislocate it completely inferiorly, or you can dislocate it posteriorly, which means out the back. And those are rare, and sometimes they happen with bigger trauma. And sometimes, actually, people with epilepsy will have seizures, and they will dislocate their shoulder posteriorly. But most of the time it's an anterior or a front dislocation, and it usually pulls the labrum off of, so that's the lip that deepens the socket, and it usually will pull that off the bone, and then you have a detachment, and that confers a lot of stability to the shoulder. So the rotator cuff muscles are this cuff of muscles that come from the shoulder blade and the anterior chest, and the tendons of them create a cuff, and that's how you get the rotation motion in your shoulder. And those confer a lot of stability, but if you dislocate and that labrum tears, it's called a Bankart lesion. There's even a name for the lesion. So that just means that your labrum tore down at the bottom. And the interesting thing is, the younger you are when you have your first shoulder dislocation, the worse the prognosis is. Now, when older patients, if you're 60 and you dislocate your shoulder, we're going to check and make sure you don't have a rotator cuff tear, because that is a way to tear your rotator cuff, is dislocating your shoulder. If you don't tear your rotator cuff and you're over 50 and you dislocate your shoulder, the chances that you will do it again are very slim. If you dislocate your shoulder, so ball coming out of the socket, when you're young, let's say you're a teenager or early 20s, your chances of it coming back out are huge. Somewhere the studies vary from like 8 to 65%. And I don't understand how that happens, but that just tells you that you can do a good study and you can get very different results. But we know it's much higher. So typically in my practice, what I do is I will give a young patient one-time chance, and if they redislocate a second time, I will recommend surgery. So if they come out one time and it has to get put back, we just put them through physical therapy. But then if they come out a second time, I usually will recommend surgery. But it's not 100%. I mean, I saw a young man in my office this week who had been out six different times. Now, he had a very large, what we call a Hill-Sachs lesion. So his ball of his humerus would come out and get stuck on the underside of the socket, and it created a big dent, and that dent probably got bigger and bigger every time he did it. So his surgery is going to be a little bit more complicated, but he is ready to go have surgery. He put up with it until he got to the point where he would come out just swimming. So yeah, so it's a very different. So acromioclavicular joint, AC joint, that's a shoulder separation. Ball comes out of the socket, that's a dislocation. Separations are usually treated non-operatively unless it's really, really a huge separation. And that means that the ligaments holding that whole complex together need to be reconstructed. They can't be repaired. You have to use a graft and make a new ligament. Shoulder dislocations, again, these are much, much higher recurrence rate in a young person. I mean, to the point that you wouldn't even really ever consider doing a surgery just for a dislocation on an older person. I've never seen that. I mean, I guess it's possible, but I've never seen a 60-year-old need surgery for a shoulder dislocation unless they tore their rotator cuff. And then when you fix the rotator cuff, that reconfers the stability to the shoulder. So it's a nuanced thing, the shoulder dislocation. There's a lot of nuance into how we treat it, and it's basically got a lot to do with the age, and then, of course, the activity level. I mean, if you dislocate your shoulder and you're 18 and you don't play a lot of sports and you don't really care about sports, there's a lot less impetus to go ahead and get that fixed surgically. But there's no one answer, like, in any of it, really. If your shoulder is separated, you know, like I said, a type 5, then you're going to get fixed. Type 2 or 3, almost nobody I know would fix it. With the collarbone, you know, you break your collarbone, pretty well going to fix that unless it's just not displaced at all. And then dislocating the shoulder again. Younger patients, more aggressive towards the surgical fix so that they don't continue to redislocate and worsen the bony part of their shoulder, because the original dislocation in a young patient most of the time is just a soft tissue thing. You just pull that lip off of the socket. And then the surgery to fix that is to repair that lip back to the socket, unless there's been some bony damage, and then you got to do a few other things. But, yeah, shoulders are obviously super important in sports, and they're important to have in good working condition, but I just thought I'd go over a little bit. I'm not sure I've really talked about the difference between shoulder separations and shoulder dislocations before, but I thought it would be useful since I see both of them in my office quite often. And they're just treated very differently, and then dislocations are treated very differently depending on the age and activity of the patient. So I hope everybody had a scary Halloween, and I guess we're off into November now and Thanksgiving upcoming, so can't wait to start thinking about that. So I hope everybody has a wonderful week, and you'll be back with me next week, and you just be blessed, Iowa.